Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Hey, and welcome to the World's Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show. My name is Adam Bayfield and I'm in the top job on the podcast, and the leader of the opposition is Tony Kerr.
Holding you to account, as always, challenging the absolute bunkum that you come up with.
How's it going, Tone?
Yeah, good, thanks.
It's good to be back.
Isn't it?
It's been a while.
We seem to go into, like, the more cricket that happens, the less podcasts we do, seems to be the pattern.
Yeah,
we sort of seem to go into hiding a bit, just a bit overwhelmed.
Yeah, it's become quite an erratic schedule, hasn't it? Where we did one a week for about 5 weeks and then nothing for 6 weeks. Not quite as bad as the World Tennis Show. We did, I think we did one podcast, a 2 year gap, then two podcasts at the same Grand Slam, then a 3 year gap. So we're doing better than that.
Just fill in the blanks, really. You join the dots. It's like a sort of Sudoku of podcast scheduling where we just give you a few bits here and there and then you just have to, you know, have to fill in the rest of the puzzle.
But yeah, it is good to be back. It's good to be back in the flat. Quite a few of the podcasts in the summer we did on the beach. Not really an option today. Winter is coming and is indeed here, and it's pretty miserable out there today. So we're back in the flat. You know, it's good to be back. Good to be back in the flat. Who needs to be on the beach? Although, notably, Tone, you didn't offer me a cup of tea today. No croissants either. It's been long been a dream of mine that I'd turn up and you'd have laid on a spread of croissants. But that's the very last thing I should expect at the moment, because you're currently engaged in a Biggest Loser competition with a couple of friends of the pod, a couple of film pod boys.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a bit of a relentless summer of consumption. So, yeah, we sort of agreed that we'd have a bit of a reset, a sort of 2 month reset, you know, try and save some money, lose some weight, you know, get a bit fitter.
Stop eating out so much.
Yeah, so we're 1 week into it.
You were eating out to help out.
We helped a lot. We really did help a lot. But yeah, this was basically, yeah, last week began, you know, I was trying to cut down on alcohol and stuff. I had 4 pints on Monday night, 5 on Friday night. But, you know, we recategorized last week as from week one to week zero,
yeah,
which is the sort of, as I'm told, I gather in the sort of special forces, I think, if there's a kind of fitness or any sort of training program, the first week is known as week zero, a sort of to kind of ease yourself in. I'm sure that's not what happens in the special forces. There's probably no easing in, but the sort of, you know, acclimatizing
build up to, yeah, it. And it's certainly an appropriate comparison, the special forces, yeah. But yeah, no, it did make me laugh. You guys did a big song and dance last week that you were starting this, you know, starting this competition. You did a weigh-in. Not enough trash talking at the weigh-in for me, but
it's very genial weigh-in.
But yeah, then at the very end of the week on Sunday, I messaged and said, "Oh, can we get an update on how that's going?" And you replied and said, "We're reclassifying this week zero." So in other words, you haven't started.
Yeah, this week's been very good, though, may I add.
Yeah, well, it is Wednesday morning, but but yes. That's good. No, good for you. Good to hear it. Well, you know, good luck with that.
Cheers, mate.
But we should probably move on to talk about the cricket, because we have got a lot to talk about today. As we say, it has been a while since we did one of these. So there's, yeah, loads of cricket to catch up on. I will be painstakingly grinding my way through some ball-by-ball match reports for all those T20s and ODIs that you've already forgotten about. But yeah, England's international summer has come to an end. It's October tomorrow, so the summer is definitely over. We're going to be reflecting on all of that. The IPL's happening as well, so lots to talk about there. And we might get round to tackling a few questions from listeners as well. And stay tuned till the end of the show, because you and I, Tone, need to have a debrief about what happened last week, when rather unbelievably, we were invited as guests of honour at the Sports Awards night at our old school. And on a related note, there's also been an extraordinary historical find, an archaeological find, which I'd like to dig into with you later as well.
Yeah, I mean, a find that is quite literally shocked and stunned in equal measure. So
stunned the world. So yeah, looking forward to getting into all of that. But first, let's move on to the section in my notes marked content. So since last we spoke, Tone, a lot of cricket has happened. So let's do a bit of a, as I say, this is kind of our end of summer review. Not really sure where to start. So the last time we spoke, we were talking about the test series with Pakistan, and that seemed to be kind of poised. We were very excited after a thrilling first test. We were very excited for the remainder of that
series. So excited we didn't return to discuss it.
For 2 months. But yeah, one of the reasons for that is because that test series turned out to be a bit of a damp squib in the end, wasn't it? Very much spoiled by the weather. So we'll touch on that test series, but let's do that in a bit because a lot of cricket has happened since then. And maybe we could start by talking about that, by talking about the white ball series that came at the back end of the English summer. Started with some T20s against Pakistan. That series was drawn 1-1 after the first game was washed out. That was this month, Tone, as we're recording this in September. The last of those T20s took place in September. That feels like a very long time ago, doesn't it? There's been a lot of cricket since then. So then after that, there was a T20 series against Australia, which England won. With a remarkable collapse by Australia in the first game, followed by a comfortable victory for England in the second game, and then a win for the Aussies in the dead rubber. And that was followed by an absolutely belting ODI series, which saw momentum kind of shifting from match to match, with the Aussies winning the first game, England the second, and then the decider was a real thriller that went to the very last over, with Australia running out winners by 3 wickets, thanks to a partnership of 212 between Glenn Maxwell and Alex Carey. So we've had some pretty sensational cricket time. We've had some sensational individual performances from the likes of Sam Billings, Jofra Archer, Johnny Bairstow, Adil Rashid, Tom Curran, Dawid Malan, Joss Butler on the English side, Mitchell Stark, Adam Zampa, as I mentioned, Maxwell and Carey for Australia, Mohammad Hafiz for Pakistan, if you can remember back that far, Haider Ali on debut as well. It's been pretty terrific viewing, but the key question, what have you made of it? I've kind of put words in your mouth there. Terrific viewing. What do you reckon? How much have you enjoyed the cricket this summer, Tone? Give me a big picture view.
Yeah, I mean, well, we've had lots to enjoy, and far more probably to enjoy than anyone could have expected or hoped for. You know, back in probably March, April. It seems weird to describe anything as a kind of a massive success, doesn't it? When, you know, there's no one been in the ground to watch it, and the ECB cutting jobs and losing money and everything. But, you know, certainly in against expectations, a rip-roaring success and something to kind of enjoy and cherish, really. And as as we said, has been obviously a very uncertain and unsettling time. So, yeah, I mean, credit to everyone involved in getting it on. It's fair to say, as you just sort of whip through some of the stuff that happened, it's chugged along at a fairly rampant pace, hasn't it? And there's been some good, there's some really good stuff. And, the matches between England and Australia, particularly at the end of the summer, were fantastic and unpredictable and exciting. And as you say, some great individual performances. It seemed to get better as the summer went on, even though, you know, we said at the time that, you know, the England West Indies series that started it all was really good. And but actually the way it's finished has been really interesting, and it's kind of overlapping nicely with the IPL now, which is already delivering some big moments and some big matches. Against a really difficult backdrop, cricket on the field actually is chugging along at a nice pace.
Yeah, I just think it's been brilliant. I said this to you the other night. I think of all the sports that I've seen post-lockdown, I do think cricket has been comfortably the best. Now, I probably would say that because it's my favourite sport, you know, A.
Biased.
Yeah, so much so that I do a podcast about it. But I really do believe that. I mean, I've enjoyed the football, and actually, you know, I might be changing my tune a little bit just in the sense that the new season of the Premier League has been absolutely magnificent so far. It's been incredibly exciting. You know, what we saw in June and July of the Premier League was a little bit flatter, but that may have just been because there wasn't as much to play for. The tennis I found a bit flat, you know, and I've watched bits of golf and bits of rugby, but the cricket to me has been easily the best. And I think it's partly for reasons that we talked about before, you know, before the start of any of this, that cricket does lend itself, I think, to not having a crowd in a way that some of those other sports don't. I don't think cricket needs a crowd in the same way. And, you know, even the sports where they're kind of piping in crowd noise, I like that, but it is, there is something artificial and slightly weird about it. You know, obviously they are piping in crowd noise in cricket, but it's just a kind of low background hum, and that's largely all you really need. Whereas in the US Open tennis, where they weren't piping in any crowd noise, it definitely does lose something when, you know, Dominic Thiem hits a winner and there's no reaction at all, or when Dominic Thiem won the US Open and kind of falls flat on his back and it's it's just total silence. There's quite a big loss from tennis there, and cricket, I don't think, does suffer in the same way. But also, it's just been very good, and it perhaps only through sheer good fortune, it's just been an extremely exciting string of matches. There's been so much to enjoy in this English summer. It might be nothing to do with the circumstances. It might be because of the fact that they're all bubbling together and that they're so kind of focused on their cricket. I have no idea. It's kind of too early to say, isn't it? It might be that this winter we see some much drabber fixtures. It could be because the pitches were being reused and there was a bit more in it for the bowlers. I don't know at this point, but for whatever the reason, it was just very exciting cricket. And I'm just very grateful to everyone involved for making it happen, because I've loved it.
I think in terms of the way things have developed over the summer, I mean, you'd imagine clearly that the players and everyone involved have kind of got used to that bubble setup, and yeah, maybe that the fact that they're kind of getting used to not having a crowd and getting used to the situation might be, you know, slightly tempered by getting a bit bored of the bubble. And I know, you know, Jofra Archer has spoken about, you know, he's probably reaching his bubble limit somewhat, having spent, I think, something like 87 days, you know, inside the bubble this summer. Obviously, is the IPL now, and, you know, potentially tours to come. But yeah, but equally, maybe, you know, even though the situation is really, it's very hard to predict or even, I think, make a judgment on whether it's a positive or negative situation at the moment, kind of countrywide. But certainly over the summer, yeah, maybe players are just getting a bit more relaxed about the whole thing, and any kind of uncertainty there was perhaps when they first came back onto the pitch has sort of ebbed away a bit. Now, that, as you say, that might change, and things might look quite different in a couple of months. But yeah, at least for now, that's the way I've seen it.
So turning then to the action itself, you know, to the action on the field, how do you rate England's white ball teams at the moment? You know, from what you've seen this summer, well, there's a question, I suppose, whether it's even fair or sensible to draw too many judgments from the action this summer. But from what you've seen this summer, where do you think they sit at the moment? How much has changed since last year's World Cup win? Are you as confident about their chances in the T20 World Cup next year as you, or we perhaps were? You know, where do you think they are on their trajectory towards the defence of their title, in their 50-over title in 2023? Assuming that those tournaments go ahead.
Yeah.
What do you reckon?
It is hard to say. I mean, I think we said at the beginning of the summer that I think mostly you would give people free passes this year.
Do you think that still holds? Were we right about that?
Slightly, yeah. I think slightly. I mean, I think certainly in terms of negative performances, I think there are players there that have put in good performances, which, you know, who have maybe moved the needle a bit on where they are in the in the overall kind of scheme of things. But yeah, no, I think England are going along pretty well, to be honest. There will be a lot of teams in contention, clearly, when the T20 World Cup happens. You know, that's going to be a very competitive tournament. I don't know if you could say England are streets ahead or... yeah, I think things are moving along pretty nicely. Like they chopped and changed a little bit. They had some players who weren't available towards the latter end of the summer. You know, obviously Ben Stokes wasn't there. And, you know, as we've talked about at length, has become the match-changing game winner in England's lineup across all formats. So, yeah, you know, Adil Rashid is really, really coming on, isn't he? Sam Billings made his maiden century. You know, he's been a bit of a bit part player, obviously, over the last few years. But, you know, you look at the strength and depth, the options there. I think they'll be pretty satisfied going into the winter.
You can make an argument that they've improved from last year, in the sense that, you know, well, obviously the batting has been imperious for a long time and continues to be so. Someone like Billings has come in and, you know, really kind of illustrated how much depth there is there, and Tom Banton's floating around as well. But then the bowling attack actually seems to be getting better. As you say, Rashid is still doing the business. Wokes is arguably performing as well as he ever has. Likewise, Mark Wood, you know, Archer was brilliant. You know, seems to be more comfortable in white ball cricket at the moment than Test cricket. Is something beeping?
I think it's just the dishwasher's finished.
Okay. And you can throw Tom Curran in there as well. You know, there is maybe one weakness in that team now, though, which perhaps wasn't there before, which is in the number seven spot. You know, it used to be Moeen Ali was batting at seven, and at least in theory, he was a frontline batsman. And, you know, England had frontline batsmen all the way down to seven and a strong tail. Whereas now, you know, because Moeen, let's not get into it, but, you know, I think you probably can say somewhat safely that he's a, you know, I don't want to use the word spent force, but he's struggling at the moment, isn't he? So, and seems to be kind of falling out of contention. So that means that batting at seven now, it's either Curran or Wokes, and decent batsmen though they are, you know, that's probably a place too high for them. So there, you know, there's maybe an issue there, because if England do lose a couple of early wickets, guys who are coming in are maybe a little bit more anxious, a little bit more jumpy, because they know they haven't got quite the same amount of depth. But, you know, I think things do look pretty good, you'd have to say, at the moment, despite the fact that they did lose this series to Australia, the first bilateral ODI series of more than one match that they've lost in, I think, 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, the only flip side to that, I guess, is that, you know, obviously Australia won the first ODI. Obviously, the third one was very tight. The second one, England really got away with it slightly. Or did Australia throw it away? Did England turn it around in kind of miraculous fashion? A bit of both. But, you know, that possibly could have got... things might have looked slightly different. Pretty fine margins. And clearly, yeah, Australia have got some outstanding players in their side. And
well, they do, although my brother did text me at some point, I think during one of the T20s, and said, this is the worst Australian team I've seen in all my years sporting cricket. Now, I don't think that's fair or true. And as you say, there are some world-class players in there, but I wouldn't necessarily put Australia right at the top of the tree in terms of England's rivals for the big white ball tournament. So the fact they've lost that series, I suppose, is a concern. But it is only three games. You know, it is very specific circumstances this year, and they really could and should have won that third game, you know, on another day, but for that extraordinary partnership they would have done. So, yeah, lots to be encouraged about still, I think. One interesting question that's kind of arisen in these games is if you're picking an England ODI team at the moment, or an England T20 team, and you've got everyone available, does Joe Root get in it?
He wouldn't be in my T20 team, 100%. He just hasn't done enough, has he? So, and I don't think that's any necessary slight on him. So that's at the moment as well. You know, possibly, you know, in a couple of years, he may be in contention to be in the T20 team, but not for me at the moment.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a no-brainer, I think, isn't it? I mean, yeah. It is a bit unfair on Root, because people say, well, you know, what has he done in T20? Well, he does average 35 in T20 internationals. He did play that incredible match-winning innings against South Africa at the last T20 World Cup, which kept England in that tournament. They obviously ended up going to the final. You know, he's got a decent record in T20 international. It's just that there are lots of other options who are, you know, who have better records, who are better. And right now, as Ed Smith said, there's no point in him even being in the squad. He's not going to be in the first choice 11, so you may as well give him a break and leave him out of your plans for that.
And one more thing, you know, with Root, you know, I think in T20s now, you do need to be clearing the ropes as often as possible. It seems quite obviously a very simple thing to say. But yeah, he just isn't that kind of player, is he, who's going to be explosive and you know, rotating the strike or whatever, you know, obviously Root is more than that. But, you know, you'd see him maybe like 10 years ago as a T20 player, he'd have been in the setup and been asked just to, yeah, kind of score, a run a ball and make sure you get your big hitters on. Mm. But nowadays, I think it's just, you need explosion. You need explosive hitting just from top to bottom, don't you?
He does score a little bit more than a run a ball. It's worth saying. I think his strike rate is 126, but compared to the other guys in that team, that's about 20, 25 runs per 100 balls lower. I think one thing that's happened in the last couple of years that kind of settles this debate is that Joss Butler has become a top order batsman in T20 cricket. So your top three now is Roy Bairstow, Butler in some combination. Then you're going to have Morgan, then you're going to have Stokes. Is Root going to bat at six? You know, that doesn't make any sense. So he just doesn't get in that team.
Well, and David Milan, now the top ranked player in the world.
David Milan should be in there as well. So, you know, so it's a tricky question how you even get those guys in before you talk about Root. So as I said, I think it's a bit of a no-brainer at this point that Root isn't in the T20 squad. But what about the 50-over team?
there's probably more room for him there.
Well, I mean, even that is possibly a little bit glib in the sense that on one level, it's a fairly absurd discussion because he averages 50 in ODI cricket with 1600s.
But yeah, the direction of travel isn't for players like him, is it? Unfortunately, I don't know whether it's harsh to say he's delivering under his potential because obviously as England Test captain and everything, he's got a lot going on. But yeah, I don't know. I probably would have him in my team at the moment.
Yes, although as we've just said, England have so many batting options and Billings has come in now, and how do you accommodate everybody? And you're not going to leave out Bairstow, Roy, Butler, Morgan, Stokes. So in that top six, the only one where there's even a question is Root. And if you do want to get Milan in or Billings, then surely he's the one to go. I mean, there's a quote from Billings not long ago saying, that England ODI team is probably the hardest team in sport to get into. But there is maybe just that crack in the door now, because although, as I say, that Root's overall record is so formidable, that average is 50, but it is going down. So since the start of 2019, which is 28 matches, his average drops to 44, which is still very good, but not quite as sensational. And it actually in Test cricket in the same period, he's averaging 38. So it might be fair to say that his batting on the wane might be a bit harsh because it could just be a patch, but he is not producing really in quite the same way. And so the fact this is even a debate, I probably, I would still have him in the ODI team because I think he still has a useful role in that sort of anchor position. If England lose a couple of early wickets, would you rather have Joe Root walking out or Sam Billings walking out? I think you want Root, don't you? Like, to some extent, it's a bit one-dimensional if you've just got explosive player after explosive player. But yeah, the fact this is even a debate, I can't really imagine having a conversation about leaving out Williamson or Smith or Kohli from their respective teams, and Root's supposed to be in that company. So it's kind of a worrying thing for Root and England that this is even being talked about on something as prestigious as the World Cricket Show.
Yeah, I mean, but it's been coming for a while, hasn't it? It's I think it does sort of speak to the length of time that Root's perhaps been off the boil. So yeah.
So that's the white ball stuff. As I mentioned, it feels like a very long time ago now. It is a very long time ago, but that Pakistan Test series, it was just a real shame. My main sort of feeling about that series now was just a shame because the weather intervened. It was all set up for a cracking series, and it just didn't really happen because the second test was almost entirely washed out. The third test, there was more action, but ultimately rain put pay to any chances of a result. And in particular, it was a shame for Pakistan, who obviously put themselves through a lot in coming to England and bubbling, and in the end didn't get nearly as much time in the middle as they would have been expecting. As I say, there was really very little play in the second test. There was a bit more play in the third, and really kind of two big headlines or two big things jump out from that game. The first one, the double century scored by Zach Crawley. He made 267, his maiden test century, and he turned it into a double. Be fair to say, Tone, that it's one of the most impressive performances by a young English batsman in a very long time. I know this is a long time ago now, Tone. I don't know if you can remember that innings, but it was pretty impressive, wasn't it? A star is born? Is that going too far?
Well, yeah, it was a very, very impressive knock. And as you say, it's probably been a little while, hasn't it, since we've seen something like that. So great to see him kind of take that opportunity and really step up. There's been players who've threatened to kind of really bed in over the last few years, and Crawley's probably at this stage where he's just on the verge of doing that. So good for him.
I suppose we wouldn't want to get carried away in the sense that, in the way that perhaps some are, in that he does need to back it up. It's obviously not a criticism, or he hasn't had an opportunity yet to back it up. But before we kind of rush to two sweeping conclusions, it's worth remembering that Rob Key made a double 100 in Test cricket. For all that he was a good player, didn't go on to have much of a Test career after that. Karen Nair made a triple 100 against England a few years back, hasn't been seen since. One innings doth not butter no parsnips, whatever the expression is. But I suppose the difference here is A, that it was against a very good attack. We talked about how good that Pakistan bowling attack was. And B, that he's 22. He's so young. It's so encouraging to see someone. He's still going to develop. He's still got so much potential to improve. So, and there's definitely no doubting his talent. If you, you know, if you watch that innings back, you watch highlights of that innings back, just the, it's just front foot drive after back foot drive. It's, you know, it's great to watch. And it's, yeah, it's a very exciting moment for England fans. And the other big thing from that game, and you may not have heard about this time because not many people picked up on it, was that Jimmy Anderson took his 600th test wicket. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I got vague, kind of caught wind of it, but I didn't really look into the situation.
Look into the details. We don't need to have a massive conversation about this because I think, you know, I sort of made my feelings fairly clear when we talked about Broad getting his 500th. The key takeaway is that I just find it incredibly tedious. You know, all the fanfare about it. I suppose it's just a good opportunity to reflect on how good Jimmy Anderson is and has been. But I feel like that's a conversation we have a lot. So,
yeah,
is it needed?
I think it was. Yeah, it was obviously very, very significant. You know, the first fast bowler to get to 600. I mean, as we discussed when Broad got there, you know, it's very much just a number.
Yeah.
He could well get to 700.
Yeah. There's no jeopardy. There's no sense that he's not going to get there. That's one of the things that bothered me, is that all the BBC Sport headlines was like Anderson Hunt's 600th wicket. Now, I get that he may not have got it that day, but he would have got it the next game. It's not like England hunt wickets in search of victory. It's just, will he get it today or will he get it in a few months' time?
Yeah.
It just doesn't interest me that much. And it's not that I don't think it's a significant achievement. It absolutely is. But just seeing, you know, commentators and pundits kind of leaping up and punching the air or saying that it's the thing that most excited them in the game or that they almost remember, I just feel like you're missing the point of sport if that's the thing that gets you most excited. And as we talked about with Broad, much as it is a phenomenal achievement, just number of wickets isn't really the right measure, or it definitely shouldn't be the only measure when it comes to sort of ranking test bowlers in history. And one of the reasons for that is because, you know, Anderson's had such a long career, he's played for so long, he's played so many matches, that to a certain extent, of course you're going to get a lot of wickets, but then maybe it is the longevity that is what's so impressive. Maybe that's the point, the fact that he has been able to stay at this level, you know, for so many matches and so many years. He made his debut, this is worth reflecting on every so often, he made his debut in May 2003. Tony Blair was Prime Minister with another 4 years to go. George W. Bush was in his first term as US President. And God forbid, but we might be heading for the second term of the President after the President after him. Andrew Strauss was a year away from making his debut. Alistair Cook was 3 years away from making his debut. And Zach Crawley was 5 years old. So yes, that is quite impressive that he's still going at this point. We did have a good tweet from a listener named Roger Grace. This was like 2 months ago now. But his tweet came in after our chat about Broad, and he'd actually done some homework. He'd done some kind of statistical investigation. You know, he says himself, he's like, I said it was very impressive, and he said, I don't think I'll be taking Zaltzman's job anytime soon, but I always enjoy looking at stats couched in a little more context. So he said, so much more to be factored in, but when rendered as wickets per innings, Murali took 800 wickets in 230 innings, which is 3.48 wickets per innings. Warne took 708 in 273 innings, that's 2.59 wickets per innings. Kumble, 2.62 wickets per innings. Jimmy, 2.06 wickets per innings. McGrath, 2.32. So in that top five bowlers by number of wickets, Jimmy is easily, you know, has got easily the lowest ratio. And he picked out a few other kind of notable ones. So Steyn at 2.57 compared to Jimmy 2.06. Herath at 2.55. Richard Hadley at 2.87. Graham Swan at 2.34. Yasir Shah at 3.04. So only behind Murali there. And then this is a very interesting one for me. Darren Goff, 229 wickets in 95 innings, 2.41. If Darren Goff had played 140 tests, would he have taken a lot more than 600 wickets? But then, yeah, he obviously wouldn't have played. If he could have played 140 tests, he would have done, I suppose. So, but yeah, well, I don't know. What do you make of all of that, Tone? Any thoughts?
I think that's a really valid point because, you know, and lots of people spoke about it pretty early on in his career, didn't they? You know, about his action and, you know, how far his head would come over and said, well, you know, his back's going to be broken you know, before too long. And obviously that didn't come to pass. And the way he's obviously managed his career, and he has had injuries, hasn't he? And you know, it is astonishing longevity, really, when you think about it. I just look at the team he played with in his ODI debut.
Okay, yeah, go on. So actually, that was even before May 2003, wasn't it?
December the 15th, 2002.
Hang on.
How many can you name? Yeah.
Nick Knight.
Yeah.
Marcus Shostakovich.
Well, that's your openers.
Hussein.
Captain.
Stewart.
Keeper.
No, not Thorpe. Let's go with... Oh, God. It gets more difficult now. Caddick. Oh, God. Tony's shaking his head, by the way. Just for the benefit of the listeners. I'm struggling a bit now.
Number three...
Oh, Ronnie Aronne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Run out for a duck in that one.
Go on. Well, Croft?
Go on. No, I'll dig you out here.
Put me out of my misery.
O.A. Shaw batted five. Ian Blackwell was the spinner.
That is a...
Yeah.
That would have taken me a long time to
and
get
then
there.
The other three were Craig White, Gareth Batty and James Kirtley.
I think, yeah, Blackwell and Kirtley, it would have taken me a very long time to get to.
I think probably the right time to reflect on a career is when he retires.
Exactly.
So, just while we're on the subject of retirements, we probably should mention a couple of England legends who've retired. One England legend and one... Someone who's... I just think it's got a quirky place in England Test cricket history. Ian Bell, obviously retired, and Graham Onions as well.
Yeah, true. I'd say Onions is an England legend. He's certainly been involved in a couple of, you know... legendary moments.
It's unbelievable that Onions only played 9 tests. Ridiculous. Because, yeah, as you say, he was involved in some great moments. And also, he'll almost, I think, he's always going to be talked about whenever anyone mentions the ball wobbling.
Yeah.
He'll be talked about, like, well, yeah, you know, Onions wobbled the ball. So I think he'll always be remembered for that.
Yeah, you're right. He looms much larger in kind of English cricket consciousness than 9 tests would suggest. And yeah, Bell... Well, what is it now? 5 years since he played his last test? I mean, at the time, I thought that was a bit premature to kind of cut him loose from test cricket. I think he was well out of form then, but I think he could have come back at some point. Am I right in saying he's the last 2005 Ashes hero or indeed player on either side to retire? You know, he absolutely is an England legend, isn't he? And will go down as one of the best English batsmen of this era. And had he played in an earlier era, he would have been head and shoulders above anyone else. He just happened to play at an era where he spent a lot of time at number 6 because it was a very strong top order. But
definitely, one of the most eye-catching batsmen on his day. I know, he did have his troubles, didn't he? And I think some people will kind of always bring those up. I've just brought it up, I suppose. I think in terms of his contribution as part of that team, he won 5 Ashes series. Which is kind of really all 5 Ashes series that England have won in our lifetimes. To be fair, England did win the Ashes series, didn't they, in 86, 87.
Not my lifetime,
the
last,
well, exactly, in my lifetime then, so in my conscious lifetime.
Yeah, and the 2013 Ashes he won almost single-handedly. He was absolutely pivotal to that victory. So, and as you say, one of the most kind of aesthetically pleasing batsman of his generation. It did you're right, it took him a while to get going, didn't it? Like, it was sort of a byword at one point, in sort of 2007 2008. It was a byword for he just kind of frustrated everybody with having so much talent and not being able to deliver. But eventually he switched it on, and boy did he deliver, as they say. So yeah, a big miss, a big loss to English cricket, although as I say, it is I think 5 years since he last played test. So in terms of international cricket, that loss has already happened, but it is, sad to see him go. And it is the passing of an era, really, isn't it? It's the end of that 2005 era.
True. And he played his whole career at Warwickshire as well. I mean, to make that kind of bigger contribution, I think it's, obviously deserves a lot of respect.
Another England legend, Alistair Cook, played a match-winning hand in winning Essex the Bob Willis Trophy. Haven't really got much to say about that, but just something worth noting.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, the cricket has been relentless in many ways, isn't it? Over the last few weeks, we've had...
Is the blast still
going
on?
The blast is still going.
Yeah, I haven't watched much of that, I have to say.
As you say, we've had the Bob Willis Trophy. the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy as well has been going alongside it. There's the CPL has happened, the IPL has started. Obviously, all of that international cricket in England.
Well, we'll come on to the IPL in a minute, but just to wrap up on this English summer, I mean, it feels like a pretty successful summer for England, I think, it'd be fair to say, overall. Certainly in terms of, you know, the compared to the expectations, whereas, as you say, we were worried about the quality of the cricket and the, you know, and how exciting it was likely to be. It ended up being a fantastic summer and a successful one for England on the pitch, but it could easily have been very different. I mean, they did lose that first test of the summer against the West Indies. They had to work extremely hard to turn that series around. They lost one of the ODIs to Ireland. They beat Pakistan in the test series, but could easily have lost the first test were it not for that incredible Wokes-Butler partnership, and then they would have lost the series. Would have been unjust given, you know, how dominant they were in the third game, but still, they drew the T20s with Pakistan, and then they lost their first bilateral ODI series for 5 years. So how successful a summer was it? You know, could it, has it been as successful as it seems? Or yeah, are these even the wrong, are these unfair questions to be asking, Tony? What do you think? You're rolling your eyes. Like,
No. I think probably they are. I think it has been a success. I think we should just enjoy it and reconvene in a few months. No, we'll reconvene sooner than that. No, but I do, I don't know. It is hard to be too judgmental about anything, I think, at the moment on a sports field. I know people, you know, people have snapped kind of straight back. You know, you look at the kind of the chat around the Premier League football season, you know, it is sport does operate in its own bubble anyway, doesn't it? Sort of regardless of what else is going on, people will still be furious or elated or, you know, whatever. I think it has been a tremendous success for England overall. And you know, we said, you know, the West Indies came with one of their sort of better sides for many years. Pakistan have also come over with a really good team. And then, you know, to play Australia in what has been a couple of cracking white ball series. Yeah, just come out on top in one, just come out, you know, on the wrong side in another. Yeah, I think they'll take that.
And there have been some extremely sort of positive developments and extremely good individual performances as well. We talked about Crawley, Sibley in the test side as well, Butler, who we, you know, expressed some doubts about earlier in the summer, but he did do very well in test cricket. Billings, Broad in test cricket, Anderson taking that 600th wicket, I don't know if you noticed, Archibald very well in the white ball games. So yeah, and I think we, as we say, the white ball teams look strong, despite the slightly mixed results. And then in test cricket, I think there are reasons to be much more optimistic as an England fan than there were a year ago. So yeah, I kind of played devil's advocate a bit there before, Tim, because I do think it has been a successful and, encouraging summer.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For England. We've touched on the IPL, quite a remarkable start to the tournament this year. I did actually watch, Tane, the end of the second match. I just happened to flick it on, the second game between Delhi Capitals and Kings 11 Punjab, which ended in a super over. Quite a remarkable finale with Marcus Stoinis holding its nerve with the ball. Delhi Capitals ultimately emerging the winners. We've seen some remarkable batting, an extraordinary performance with the bat from Jofra Archer, which feels slightly surprising given that he's, you know, not done much with the bat for England, but was it four sixes in a row?
Yeah. It was just some brilliant commentary from Mark Nicholas in that. I think it was the fourth six, which definitely seemed to be the biggest. Absolutely huge, but yeah, Nicholas with just the, oh, Jofra. just exactly what you want to hear.
Do you love a bit of Mark Nicholas, I have to say. And I'm not ashamed to admit it.
Nor should you be.
So yeah, have you enjoyed what you've seen so far, Tim?
Oh, I mean, yes, in short.
Yes. Let's reconvene in a month or so, and I'll ask you the question again.
Yeah, clearly a lot of the IPL is about the, you know, the crowds and the sort of utter carnage in the stands, which they clearly don't have now. But the, you know, the players seem to be delivering despite that. There have been some unbelievable bits of play, haven't there? I mean, we've got to talk about the bit of fielding from Puran on the boundary.
Oh, my God.
It was just ludicrous. I mean,
if listeners haven't seen this or don't know what we're talking about, I would suggest that they stop what they're doing and
delete the podcast and look for
and go search for this on Twitter or elsewhere on the internet.
I can't imagine you've missed it if you've been online in the last week or the last few days. I mean,
it's just astonishing.
A huge aerial shot. He's on the boundary. The ball drops probably, I don't know, 3 feet beyond the boundary, maybe 4 or 5 feet. And it's kind of coming over his right shoulder. He dives full length, catches it over his right shoulder. I mean, he takes the ball. He's already horizontal pretty much, or maybe at like sort of 15 degrees and not far off the ground, and just absolutely wings his arm or his hand kind of back under him to flick it into safety and stop the six. It's just, I mean, we've become used to players doing remarkable things on the boundary in terms of, yeah, kind of palming balls back for teammates to catch and all that kind of stuff. But I think just as an example of ludicrous athleticism and hand-eye coordination timing, I don't think I've seen better, I don't think, in terms of a bit of boundary fielding.
Look at this. No way. No way. No way. That is unbelievable.
As he it would have been a ludicrous catch just to hold the catch, even if he'd just fallen into, you know, falling over the boundary for six. But yeah, to kind of switch off your instinct to break your fall as you flick, because, you know, the ground is like, you know, the grass is, I don't know, 2 feet away from his face as he's flicking the ball. I don't know how you do that.
To just have the presence of mind to think to do that, it's absolutely astonishing. I have seen a few people say, you know, oh, for all that, that is an incredible piece of athleticism, that it shouldn't count, or, you know, that it should have been six anyway, because, you know, some people feel, well, if it goes over the rope, even if it's in the air, you know, if it's left the field of play, that it should be a six, and that any of these boundary catches that we see where someone kind of leaps up, catches it and throws it back to someone else to catch, shouldn't count as a catch. I just don't agree with that at all. As much as there might be a logic to that, do you really want to deny, do you want to not have that in the game? Do you not want to see things like that? It just doesn't seem to make sense to me. It's one of the most exciting things you'll ever see in cricket. Why would you want to kind of stop the possibility of that?
Yeah, exactly. I completely agree. Ludicrous to suggest even that should be. So how would you deal with it? You know, you'd have to have like Hawkeye on the boundary to deem if it had passed the rope. And so
it seems to make
impossible to administer.
It's much more straightforward, isn't it, to say if it touches the ground, it's a six. So, yeah, I know I'm loving it. I love stuff like that. Hey, by the way, Tone. Your beloved Rajasthan Royals are sitting pretty at the top of the IPL table. Admittedly, they've only played two games so far. We've only had 11 matches, but they are top.
I was going to say it. Well, I was going to say it. We absolutely thumped. We absolutely thumped your Kings 11.
Yeah.
In just an unbelievable match on Sunday. Did you see this?
Kings 11 smashed 223 and Rajasthan chased it down. Was that the highest chase in IPL history?
Highest IPL chase. They did it with three balls to spare, which is unbelievable because they needed, I should have jotted down the numbers, but I think they needed something like 80 off sort of 29 balls or something like that. They scored a ludicrous number of runs off the last five overs. Sanju Sampson kind of got them on the way, 85 from 42 balls, seven sixes in that. And then Rahul Tuatia in the end, I mean, he I think he was about seven off 17 balls or something like that. He really wasn't doing the job. And then he just absolutely destroyed Sheldon Cottrell. I think he hit five sixes off his over.
Yeah, Sheldon Cottrell one for 52 off three overs.
Absolutely brutal.
What's that? So he finished Michael Scott gif.
He finished 53 off 31 with 7 sixes as well. Yeah, just ludicrous hitting. You know, Sanjay Sampson's a brilliant player to watch, and he was just, you know, the way he creams it through the offside for six, kind of like there's no issue at all. It's brilliant. And then Twati, yeah, came, the left-hander came in and just swatted ball after ball of Cottrell for six. So yeah, it's been pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Tern, I'm not normally very keen on the IPL, but I have to say I'm more into it this year. It's very welcome. Just give me any cricket. I am enjoying it. I mean, as I say, it's more something I flick on for 20 minutes, half an hour, rather than something that's appointment viewing for me. But I am enjoying it for what it is. So all it took was a pandemic for me to get into the IPL.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, when we picked out our allegiances all the way back in...
Yeah, 10 years ago.
2010.
Yeah.
You know, would it be fair to say crestfallen, having been dealt the Royals and the Kings 11 Punjab, yeah, who had pretty mediocre looking teams. Now you look at the Rajasthan Royals team, see, loving it. Joss Butler, Steve Smith, you know, Sanjay Sampson, as we said, Jofra Archer. It's blockbuster.
All right, Tom, I think that will probably do in terms of proper cricket. But before we go, we really need to talk about what happened last week. As I teased at the top of the show, we were invited as guests of honour to the annual Sports Awards night at our old school. Can you explain, Tom, how did we end up doing this?
I don't know.
Why were we chosen to do this? What have we achieved?
Well, I think it was very delicately put by the head of sport at Elizabeth College.
He approached you, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, you know, in the past few years, they've had kind of, you know, sort of former pupils who've gone on to be professional footballers and whatnot, or, you know, international athletes, I think. Very much, I think, the way it was pitched to me is that he wanted someone or, you know, or a couple of people like us to come in and kind of show the kids that it doesn't matter how hopeless you were at sport, you can still enjoy it and you can still get something out of it, which I think we adequately kind of got over to the kids.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's probably fair. I mean, we were there. So we ended up, you know, mostly talking about our cricket team, which we talked about a lot on the podcast. You know, I did an episode about the Isle of Wight tour not very long ago. But yeah, I just couldn't believe it. You forwarded me the message from that teacher saying, would we come in and give this speech at the Sports Awards? One thing I would say is that I wouldn't say it was like a first-class piece of organisation from you, in that you forwarded me a screenshot of that message and I replied, haha, what did you say? And you didn't reply. And then like 10 days later, Elena, my partner, who also works at the school, said, oh, Tom's just asked me if you're looking forward to Tuesday night. I was like, what are you talking about? So, I ended up being committed with, you know, without realizing it.
Yeah, I thought that was any way to get you on the stage. It went well. I mean, we had a little bit of a spiel prepared, which we were kind of thrown slightly at the start by the format. I thought we pulled it round.
Didn't he say, I felt very out of place because it was all about, you know, this kind of inspirational, you know, former pupils, as I say, Cameron and Alistair Chalmers are both Olympic runners. Lots of other great athletic performances being mentioned. He said that the teacher had said to you, you'd asked him what the format was going to be, and he'd said to you, well, I'll start with a little video clip from Nelson Mandela, and then it'll be over to you guys. So I did feel that we might have been, you know, the wrong choice.
Anyway, listeners will be pleased to know that it actually went all right. There were a couple of teachers there who used to teach us, and they were still present, who enjoyed it, I think. And actually, since then, the teacher in question who organised it for us has said, we've been asked to come back to do a whole school assembly, which is mad. So anyway, that's tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I did say,
are you looking forward to it?
I did say to you, I'm happy to do that as long as they don't mind us using exactly the same material, because I'm not I'm not writing anything else. I felt particularly out of place because you work in sport, don't you? You're, you know, for listeners who aren't aware, and who are there any out there who aren't aware that you're the sports reporter for ITV and the Channel Islands, whereas my only connection to sport is this. the principal of the school. We were introduced by the sports teacher to the principal, and she was kind of like, sorry, who are you? And he said, yeah, they do this podcast about cricket. It's very renowned. And we both burst out laughing. But as you say, a couple of our old teachers who are still knocking around, one of them came up to me afterwards, our old geography teacher, and was like, I really enjoyed that. Really enjoyed that, guys. Yeah, it was really great to hear about, you know, your cricketing exploits and things. I was like, oh, I'm, that's good. I'm glad to hear it. And he's like, yeah, it was basically just two people who know each other really well, just wittering on. I was like, okay, I'm not sure that's, yeah, slightly less convinced about that review.
It was very hard to gauge, yeah, what the reaction would be. Because basically, you know, we were sort of somewhat taking the mick because we had a very infamous and inglorious cricket career at college. As you say, I did think, you know, some parents at the back might have been sort of shaking their heads and kind of, you know, tutting at the, you know, that we're sort of besmirching the good name of the sports program at Elizabeth College. But yeah, it did seem to go down all right. As I was gonna say, it felt like when we got there, I felt like we're turning up to do Dragon's Den. That's about the sort of level of my nerves going into it. A Dragon's Den pitch that we just hadn't prepared for and that we knew no one would invest in.
We're not prepared at all. But we mainly talked about our cricketing mishaps. And speaking of which, something fairly extraordinary has emerged, Tone, in the last couple of weeks. So we've talked about on the show, as I say, not long ago, we did almost a whole episode about our tour to the Isle of Wight in 2001 when we got bowled out for 22. But amazingly, that was not the low point because a couple of weeks after the tour, we played a match on our home ground. And we're bowled out for 13. So over to you here, Tony.
Well, yeah, and just completely out of the blue, a couple of weeks ago, a WhatsApp message appeared from a friend and listener to the show. I don't know if he listens to the show. But yeah, the scorecards from that day have surfaced, unbelievably. I think Jamie Nussbaumer must have stowed them away at some point, God knows why, and discovered them in a pile of stuff he was clearing out. Remarkable find. Anyway, I'll give you a few of the highlights. Some of these players might be listening now. I don't know. But yeah, it was Guernsey against Magdalen.
And just worth prefacing, by the way, I know you're going to go through it, but Magdalen batted first. And, you know, what really sticks out in my mind is that we actually thought that we were going to win that game because we bowled and fielded quite well and restricted them to not very many. And we were like, we're going to bloody win this, lads. We're going to win a game.
So, yeah, we restricted Magdalen to 90 for 9 from 35 overs, which, as you say, at the time, we were absolutely buoyant about. And there's one wicket in particular that I vividly remember, which turned out to be their number 4, who was who got out for 2, bowled Nussbaumer, caught David Knight.
Yeah, I remember this, yeah.
At the time, I mean, we were obviously ripping through them at that point. And it was like a really powerful pull shot straight to Dave Knight at square leg. And I'll never forget his face. Just looked absolutely terrified and then elated as he sort of clung on.
Yeah, and it was proper like sort of celebration. You know when celebrations are like angry? It was literally like, yeah, come on. It was like Rafa Nadal winning the French Open. It was, yeah.
Yeah, it was electric that moment. I was just running my eye over the bowling figures. Certain A. Bayfield bowled 5 overs, 1 for 23.
I mean, this is one of the most notable things to come out of this archaeological find because I actually had quite a good game. 5 overs.
Two wides in there.
Well, we don't need to talk about that, but yeah. 5 overs, 1 for 23. And then, you know, yes, I got a duck, but I was batting 11. So what do you expect?
So I thought you did well. Long-time listeners will be, will be used to hearing the name Gordon McRae, London correspondent. 3 overs from him, 0 for 21. So, yeah.
Not such a good game.
Well, I did all right. But anyway, the real magic comes when you look at our batting card. Guernsey against Magdalen, 10th of July, 2001. I mean, that's a long time ago. Jamie Nussbaumer and Nick Masterton opened. Nussbaumer 1, Masterton 6. And then it reads, duck, 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 duck.
Was that batsman 3-8?
Yeah.
All ducks.
Batsmen three to six were all bowled Murray for ducks. Dave Knight a duck, Andy Orme a duck, Charlie Allen a duck, Arian Green a duck, Ross Allen a duck, Gordon McRae a duck.
I like this, name and shame.
Yeah, Gordon McRae, London correspondent Gordon McRae a duck, LBW Burse. And then Seb Chick came in, made two, not out, he finished. And then just unbelievably, A Kerr number 10 and A Bayfield number 11. I mean,
I do think you've got to ask questions of the selectors. I think don't point all the blame at the players, because A Kerr, Anthony Kerr, was coming in at number 10 as a specialist batsman. You were a wicketkeeper, but Seb Chick was also a wicketkeeper. He had the gloves. I completely didn't realise this, you know, looking back. You were picked to bat, literally to bat at 10. Although it kind of paid off, because what were your second top score?
Well, that's just exactly, it's one of my finest moments, I think. So having gone 1-6, duck, 2, Kerr, 3. Absolutely phenomenal knock at the tail there. Tail really wagged for us. But I'm not sure if they scored it right, because according to the scorecard, I made three singles before getting out. Mm. In my memory, I sort of paddle swept my first ball for 2, but I may be misremembering.
In your memory, you skipped down the wicket and reverse hit a 6 over square leg.
Yeah, quite. Anyway, so I made 3, promptly got out LBW to Burse as well, like McRae. And then you came in and were cleaned up for a duck just to complete the route, 13 all out.
I have a really clear memory of walking out at 13 for 9 and just shaking my head in sheer embarrassment, shame, humiliation. You know, I'd done my job with the ball. A Kerr's walking back very smug that he's made 3. And I go up to Seb and I'm like, Seb, you know, let's at least try and make this respectable, mate. I mean, come on, we can't be bowled out for this cheaply. Let's just try and bat out the overs, maybe see if we can get up to 30, 40, you know, something better than the Isle of Wight. And Seb was like, yeah, okay. It was like, yeah, let's just sort of block it out. Blocks 2, third ball, massive swing, completely missed, clean bowl.
Yeah. Well, hang on, Chick is not out. So did they get that wrong, do you think? Were you
not out?
No,
I mean, I did a massive swing. Yeah. No, Chick very patiently followed my instructions. I went for a
from the hip.
Huge swipe, full pint, middle stump. Yeah, as you say, batsman 3-8, all got ducks. One of those batsmen, Ross Allen, who has gone on to be a star of the Guernsey FC football team, found much more success in football than in cricket. We were talking about this with Ross the other day, going over the scorecard, and he remembered, which I had forgotten, that he came back. So as you say, 3-8, all ducks. And in fact, I think you've got the scorecard, not me, but was everyone bowled apart from Ross?
In 3-8?
Well, out of the whole scorecard?
No, there was a couple of LBWs, a couple of caught, but certainly batsman 1... 3, 4, 5, and 6 were all bowled by Murray.
Okay, so then
Murray.
So then Ross comes in at 7 and is out for a duck, but caught. I think he hit one to point or something. And apparently when he came back to the dressing room with the score like 5-6 or something, we were all patting him on the back and high-fiving and going, well done, Ross, you got bat on ball.
Oh, dear. So anyway, it reads 13 total for 10 wickets. The whole ordeal lasted 16.4 overs.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way, I was thinking, you talk about memory playing tricks on you, and, you know, did you paddle sweep that? You remember paddle sweeping it for 2, but did they get the scoring wrong, or is your memory wrong? I was thinking there's something very strange going on with my memory, or this kind of shows, you know, the sort of flaws in memory, because I remember very clearly that we missed the 2001 Wimbledon men's final, Rafter Ivanišević, one of the famous Wimbledon finals, to play that game. And I remember us like getting updates on the tennis while we were playing. But then when the date appeared on the scorecard, 10th of July, I looked it up and I was like, oh, this doesn't make any sense, because the Wimbledon final was the 9th of July. But I've just checked, famously, it rained on Sunday, and it's one of the only Wimbledon finals to be played on Monday. So I am right. I am great at memory.
Well done. I do vividly remember that, actually. Well, I think we're probably more interested in the tennis than the cricket, but obviously. Yeah. Well, anyway, you know, on the off chance, is anyone listening from Magdalen under 14s from 2001. Get in touch. What are your memories of the match?
They've got a very different podcast.
They probably went home being like, why the f*** did we come to Guernsey? What a waste of time this was.
All right. Well, anyway, that is going to be your lot for the World Cricket Show this time because we've really gone on. But, you know, it's good to be back, Tone. It's good to be back. And let's not leave it so long next time. Let's come back soon to discuss, IPL, Blast, various things that are going on. There's quite a bit of international cricket slated for the winter, pandemic permitting. So lots to look forward to there. But in the meantime, if you enjoy the podcast, there's various ways you can get more involved in it. We're on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm sure you'll find us. You can send us an email, worldcricketshow@gmail.com. And if you do enjoy the show, then we'd really appreciate a rating and or a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to it, because that really does help with the algorithms and bring more people to the show. And I wanted to say as well, we're really grateful that people have supported us on Patreon over the last few years. But I think you agree, Tone, that just at the moment, I don't really feel comfortable asking people to part with their money for us to do this, because we're going to do it anyway. We're not providing a huge amount of additional content on Patreon. And given the current situation, both of us are very lucky to be in jobs that aren't directly threatened by the pandemic. So, as I say, this is, as much as we love doing it and as much as we, take it seriously, this is ultimately a hobby for us. So, if you want to keep subscribing on Patreon, absolutely great. But, don't feel obliged to keep doing it. It's not the most important thing in the world at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. And we've been somewhat tardy with our schedule. But I think the certainly the ambition is there to be a bit more regular over the next few weeks. We've probably said that 15 times, I reckon, over the last 10 years. Mm. But anyway, that is the ambition, certainly.
It'll happen. All right, well, that's about it, I think. Stay in school, everyone. I don't know if I should keep saying that. It's kind of politically controversial now. But we will be back soon and we'll talk to you then. Cheers, Tone.
Cheers.
Bye-bye for now. I can smell your fear.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.